Hey guys, SEC Mike here for That SEC Podcast, Episode 7. Today we got a really special guest for you guys, Dave Bartu of CFB Matrix. If you don't follow Dave Bartu, he's a must-follow on Twitter, at CFB Matrix. He's got one of the best analytical websites out there, cfbmatrix.com. You know, over the years, he's developed a technique for evaluating college coaches, TLC, talent, location, coaching. Last year, he went more in depth with coordinator rankings. This year, taking those coordinator rankings a step further with something he's called schematic advantage and how that breaks down for each opponent on the schedule. So I heard Dave talking about this the other day. These rankings just came out. I had to get him on the phone, had to get him on the show. I'm just going to let him go here for about 30 minutes. We're going to go over every SEC contender, their coordinators, how they rank in his new schematic ranking system for the 2017 season. This is going to be a really great listen. So here we go, straight to the phone call with Dave Bartu at CFB Matrix on Twitter.
I'm doing pretty good right now. I am, I got this Patreon account set up and, seeing if I can make some money to survive.
Now for people that are unfamiliar with you, how will they find your Patreon account? Just through your Twitter feed?
Yeah, they go on my Twitter feed. There's a link, patreon.com/CFB Matrix. And there's all sorts of different levels. Actually, one of the things I put in there, see, when people go to register, Mike, is they can send me a message and say, hey, I registered, and I'd love to, you know, my favorite, I want you on the SEC Mike podcast every week.
Mm-hmm.
And see, most shows, I mean, like yours, you, even like this segment, you know, you can't, you're like, dude, I can't even afford $25 a segment, right?
Right.
And that's the way most radio shows are. So I figure, okay, if I get 25 or more people that become patrons and pay even $5 a month, you know, all of this, you know, so I'm making $100 a month coming on your show every week. Not a lot of money, but I'm only using up 15, 20 minutes of my time.
Right. And for anybody that doesn't know Dave Bartu, he's at CFB Matrix on Twitter. He's just one of the best Twitter followers out there. Not only is he hilarious, but his numbers, no one else has these numbers. They're truly unique. He's got an excellent way of explaining them. You know, for years, I've been a big fan of yours. I like your TLC, how you've broken down coaching effect that way. Last year, you were into offense and defensive coordinators. And now this year, you've taken that a step further with schematic advantages for each team. Can you break that down a little bit for people that are unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, well, starting with TLC, it's simple three things: talent, location, coaching. And in all the work I've done, whether it's the healthcare, in banking, college football, because I do a lot of private consulting with college football in terms of metrics on health and wellness, strength and conditioning, and pre-LOI recruiting, it's all about simplifying everything. So when I started looking at college football, it's like, how do I simplify college football and be able to explain it with as few variables as possible? Because you and I both know there's a gazillion stats out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody always, one of them that drives me nuts, to digress a little bit, is yards per game or yards per carry or yards per catch. It's a scoreboard. Those numbers have no impact on anything unless you're playing fantasy. So, you know, when I'm looking at TLC, it's talent, location, and coaching. The talent is simply using a couple of projections. Most of it involves the recruiting numbers minus attrition and also NFL projections, because teams that have NFL talent, you can use those websites to enhance or downgrade teams based on their ability to develop what they've recruited. And so that's the big part of it. If you simply take the talent numbers, great example. I mean, you're SEC Mike in the SEC. In the last 8 years, the team with the better talent ranking in the CFB matrix, no matter where the game is played, has won 77% of all SEC conference games. Period. That's it. I don't even look at coaching or where the game is played anymore. You just take the best talent ranking in the SEC and you're going to be right over three quarters of the time, which when you look at Vegas is right just about 79 to 81% of the time on their favorites. So being able to predict that with one variable the whole season in advance, well, that's as simple as it gets. Then the L part is location. And like I said, not for the SEC, but everywhere else in the country, there's a home field advantage. And so even though you may be, if you're going up against a team that is evenly talented, then you start looking at, okay, where is this game being played? So if you have, you know, throw a couple teams out there that have pretty even talent. Now, let's say non-conference, you have, oh, you got A&M and UCLA, okay? Both teams, you got A&M, number 10 in talent, UCLA, number 15. A&M has a coach that has basically a zero coach effect. I'll get to that in a minute. And you have UCLA, which has a terrible coach effect. But that game is in L.A. So with like talent records like that, you go with the home team. That kind of enhances the prediction level as well. And the last thing that I mentioned is the C, the coach effect. How good or bad does a coach their team up for their career or coach them down, you know? And the guys who coach them up, you know the who's, the Petrino, the Bill Snyder, the Pat Fitzgerald, the Mike Leach, and the guys who coach them down, the Will Muschamps, the Charlie Strongs, you know, those guys. Those are the three things that I use to really put everything together. The coaching side of it, we just talked about, you know, you'd mentioned, is the schematic advantage, and this is brand new. Literally this just was ranked out 48 hours ago, and what we've been able to do is level the playing field and assign a career performance grade to every offensive coordinator and every defensive coordinator. And so those grades translate to a numerical value. So when we're looking at a team, so for example, Tennessee, I can look at their offensive coordinator grade, and I can look at the grade, average grade of the 12 offensive coordinators they're facing versus all the other teams in the country, and I can tell you where Tennessee ranks in terms of how difficult of an offensive coordinator schedule they have. Then we can go how difficult a defensive coordinator schedule you have, and then you look at the total coordinator package, which is your offense and defense added together, and you compare that to the actual team. So you go, you know, let's say Tennessee has a B offensive coordinator and A defensive coordinator. And how does that compare to their entire schedule? So we can rank all these teams on what we're calling and making fun of Charlie Weiss in schematic advantage. Talent still rules, but this is totally a new way to look at it. Believe it or not, the people most excited about it are your college football fantasy players, because each week we will publish the teams with the biggest talent and offensive versus defensive coordinator edge, so you put yourself in a position to really try to rack up some yards.
Yeah, and I caught your segment the other day with Bo Bounds out of Mississippi, one of the most popular radio hosts in the Southeast there. And you were saying that, you know, if Tennessee can just get essentially average offensive coordinator production from new offensive coordinator Larry Scott, I believe you said they ranked somewhere in the top 10 of this schematic advantage. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're eight. And I know anybody listening right now is like, what the hell are you talking about? But it actually, when you take a step back, it actually makes a lot of sense. All right. Now, Shoup is their defensive coordinator for his career. Okay. Just, he's only had 1 year at Tennessee, and there was a rash of injuries last year. For his career, he's still an A defensive coordinator, A grade. Now, why Jones hired Larry as the offensive coordinator with so many other experienced A, B grade choices, dude, you got me. It's like you pulled them off the first train going by Knoxville. I hate that decision, but we're going to live with it. The huge edge that Tennessee has is the offensive coordinator grade they're facing. The average one is the eighth worst in the country. And think about it, okay? So now you start thinking about it, you go, okay, Georgia has an F offensive coordinator. South Carolina has an F offensive coordinator. Florida has a D-plus offensive coordinator. Missouri has an F offensive coordinator. You just have this huge, massive litany of just inept offensive coordinator positions on their schedule. So, you know, I think Shoup is going to contain that. I really think that you don't need to have a high-scoring offense to win a lot of football games if you're Tennessee. And I think because of that, I think they're underrated going into the season.
Yeah, and just so people are not confused, because I was initially confused when you said that. So you say Tennessee's number eight schematic advantage. That doesn't mean that they have the number eight coordinator combination, but essentially their coordinators going against the schedule of coordinators they're facing. That's why you have them so high.
Exactly.
So LSU, you know, they're getting a ton of hype for their offensive and defensive coordinator, you know, maybe the best two in the nation. But where do they rank in your schematic advantage?
Yeah, and I'll tell you who started that hype as soon as Canada was hired. You know exactly where that came from, because a lot of people didn't know who Matt Canada was. Aranda, the best defensive coordinator in college football, at least by the numbers. And you bring Canada over, who in his career has also been an A+. So this combination, I think, at LSU, I mean, you do have a new head coach, and there's only been one new head coach in a national title since 1989. That was Larry Coker with that freak team at Miami. So I think LSU, though, if they can keep these two guys there, they're in position to really contend for a national title in years to come. But you look at what they have right now, overall, their schematic advantage. So you have two A-plus coordinators versus their schedule. They're ranked 22nd in the country. And the big reason is because the average defensive coordinator they're facing is the number two schedule in college football. So it's the second toughest defensive coordinator grade average schedule in college football. And that's before you even add in all the road games. They have five SEC road games, which is absolutely brutal. On the flip side, the easy part is the offense. The offensive coordinators they're facing, we have them ranked at 56. So you have an A-plus defensive coordinator versus the 56th average or toughest offensive coordinator schedule. I think people are going to really, really, really struggle to score against LSU. You have a great offensive coordinator, but first year, and he's going up against a ton of experienced defensive coordinators. That being said, do consider that in two of LSU's games, they're going up against completely inexperienced offensive coordinators, and two other games, they're going up completely inexperienced defensive coordinators. So there's, in spite of that really, really tough schedule, I think there's a lot of light in there and windows of opportunity they're going to get to take advantage of.
And it's interesting, those comments you make on Matt Canada, because as you pointed out, you were the guy kind of touting that as the A-plus hire right there as soon as that was announced, the guy from Pitt. Nobody, you know, I don't think Pitt has much of a following in the Southeast, obviously. So that was a bit of a head scratcher when it looked like they were going after Lane Kiffin. Didn't get Kiffin. Immediately made the move to Matt Canada. And it's funny that you mentioned Tennessee, kind of that Larry Scott move coming out of nowhere. From what I understand, Tennessee wanted Matt Canada. So that it sounds like that would have been their first choice. Obviously, LSU grabbed him up immediately, and they were kind of left with Larry Scott. So that's an interesting take on Matt Canada.
That's a head scratcher. How do you go from I want Matt Canada, LSU and Tennessee, to oh, our fallback Larry Scott? I mean, that's like Oregon saying, hey, our fallback from Chip Kelly is Willie Taggart. No way. I don't believe you for a second. The second choice was Larry Scott. I think there was probably a whole bunch of people that maybe turned down that job before they settled on that dude.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe I misspoke, excuse me, not number two choice, but essentially what they were left with, I guess. From what I understand, he hasn't called plays since high school football, and I think that's a sign of, you know, maybe elite coordinators not wanting to jump with Butch Jones facing his uncertainty there in Knoxville.
Yeah.
Another program in the SEC this year has got a ton of hype, Auburn. What can you tell us about their schematic advantage with their new offensive coordinator, Chip Lindsey, who was, I believe he was at Arizona State last year?
Oh, I love Auburn. The only thing I really don't like them about is their schedule. They got a 9-3 schedule. It's a tough schedule. Everything in the West is tough. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's the toughest division in college football. But when you look at Auburn, they check all the boxes for a national title contender. All of them. All right. Because you look in the last 15 years, this is for every winner of the national title game. All of them, well, except Clemson last year, were top 10 recruiters, all right, in the college matrix, okay? So you check that box. All of them had at least one top 10 class. Yes, all of them had three top 15 classes. Yes, four consecutive top 25 classes. Yes, all of them had at least one A-graded coordinator. Gus Malzahn on A-minus grade. Yes. None of them had anything worse than a C-plus coordinator. Check. Steele is at a B-minus. So when you look at everything that Auburn has, the ultimate question mark, or actually there's two things. You got a tough schedule, but that schedule is always, you know, I'd probably agree, if either team, you know, if Auburn's going to have a great year, it's going through the Iron Bowl, and that's at home. So that's huge if they get to that point. The biggest question mark, and it's the most important question mark in the most important position in college football, is that quarterback. Is he that good? Is Sidham that good? Is he going to stay healthy? Because an NFL-level quarterback wins a ton of football games in college, just better than everybody else. So I can buy the hype. You know, if Auburn, I wouldn't say ran the table, but if they end up in the playoffs, if they end up in the national championship game, if they win the national title, zero surprise because they check all the boxes that champions have.
Okay, what about this? Arkansas, you know, obviously they're at a talent disadvantage, I would say, to almost every team in the West outside of maybe Mississippi State. But they have an offensive coordinator in Dan Enos. I love him. I think he's the best offensive coordinator in the SEC. What do your numbers say about Dan Enos and overall the Razorbacks' schematic advantage?
You're right. He is the best offensive, you know, by scoring efficiency, he is the best offensive coordinator in the SEC. The defensive coordinator that they brought in, Rhodes, was a big upgrade. So now you have one of the best combinations, but you're exactly right. This is bottom of the bucket talent. And this is, I think, where people kind of lose their minds a little bit because they say, oh, Bielema is not doing as good of a job because, man, look what he did at Wisconsin. That is the most apples to oranges bullcrap comparison ever, because at Wisconsin, you're the number two recruiter in your division. You play nobody. Up until this year, there was only 8 conference games. So your schedule was all non-conference, and Nebraska, Iowa, Northwestern, Illinois, Purdue, I mean, come on. Everybody's going to win games like that. So basically, he went from Wisconsin to Purdue because he's the worst recruiter in the SEC West. So when you look at what he's done at Purdue, bowl eligibility and so forth, look at all the worst recruiters in their division in college football, you know? And so you start to see that he's done a really good job, but it's by far and away the toughest division. I mean, you have 4 top 10 recruiters just in that division. Nobody else has more than one. It's nuts. So when you look at what he's done in terms of the schematic advantage and the schedule going in, they have the 5th rated schematic advantage. They have a huge talent disadvantage, as you noted. Where their huge advantage is going to be Enos. It's not going to be Enos. It's going to be Rhodes versus the offense. The average offensive coordinator they're facing this year is ranked 78. So they're not facing anybody that's going to run up a lot of points. Their average defensive coordinator they're facing is 36. So I think what you're going to see here is you're going to see more games than usual that are going to be under the point totals that you're expecting out of Arkansas because of the tough matchups they have. Their strength offensive coordinator is the strength of their schedule, defensive coordinators, and vice versa. Their weakness slightly is a new defensive coordinator. The weakness on the schedule is a poor offensive coordinator slate. I like Arkansas to always be 6-6, 7-5. Anything above that is an absolutely fantastic coaching job by Bielema.
Now here's another interesting team, Texas A&M. Kevin Sumlin may be on the hottest seat in the SEC. He's got 2 very experienced coordinators, Noel Mazzone on the offensive side and John Chavis on the defensive side. What do your numbers say about their schematic advantage going into the year?
Well, number one, A&M is basically just a notch below Auburn. They recruit almost the same. So you have a national championship talent profile. You have a national championship coordinator profile. Their ease of schedule, their talent versus their schedule is 15th in the country. You go back to their schematic advantage, and they're ranked 32nd in the country. Their real downfall is Mazzone. He's a C-plus coordinator, you know, as an offensive coordinator, and their schedule sets up to go against that weakness. They're going up against the 30th toughest defensive coordinator profile, the 60th toughest offensive coordinator profile. I think, so for A&M to be successful, and they can be, they do have that profile to get to the college football playoffs, even from the 4th position recruiter in the SEC West. The big difference here is Mazzoni has got to get better than his career averages. If he has another C-plus year, then that hot seat may be too hot to sit on. On the flip side, and this is, I guess, one of those, you know, Harvey Dent, you know, heads or tails thing, on the flip side, you can go from extreme hot seat to the absolute penthouse if Mazzoni can get his stuff together this year.
All right, now what about Florida? You know, I don't know if you've seen Phil Steele has got Florida as his number one surprise national title contender, which essentially means a team not in the preseason top 10 that could make the playoff. What do your numbers say about Florida?
Well, you know something, they could make the playoff, sure. But you can also die from cold. Now, with Florida, you look, their recruiting isn't what it used to be, okay? It's not at the top 10 elite level. It's that second tier, okay? It's number 12 in the country. The only team that has won a national title since 2002 with a sub-10 talent profile is Clemson, okay? And only four other teams has ever even made the national championship game. Besides that, Clemson the year before, to Oregon and Virginia Tech. So to me, Florida, right off the bat on the talent side, is on the outside looking in. Now you go to that coordinator side of, remember how I said national championship coordinators or, you know, the teams have C plus or better,
right?
You know, that is not what Florida has. You know, their defensive coordinator, you got a good position there. And a guy that is running, let's see here, what is his grade right now? He got a new defensive coordinator because the dude left, right?
Right. Yeah. He went to Temple. So they got Randy Shannon, the old Miami coach, is now running the defense.
Right. And you know, so that's a huge question mark there. And then you have an offensive coordinator whose career is a D+. So you don't have the talent. You don't have the coordinator talent. No, I'm not buying it. I mean, if they even make the national title game, you're talking in the last 17 years. You're talking 34 teams. You're talking 1 in 35 to just make the game. So I don't like it. If I was going to take a team that's not in the top 10 right now to win the national title, is Auburn in the top 10? They are, aren't they?
No, I believe they're right outside. I think they're like ranked 12th right now.
Yeah, I'd take Auburn and Texas A&M. And hell, I'd take Notre Dame before I took Florida.
Wow. And, you know, the one team you keep referencing that, you know, has essentially overseeded their expectations in Clemson, they had a generational quarterback, you know, twice Heisman finalist, whereas Florida is starting a guy who's never seen a college snap. So that's a little bit of a difference there.
Oh, there's a huge difference there. Now, speaking, though, of Deshaun Watson, keep this in mind. Remember how I talked about coach effect, how coaches coach their players up or down below their talent? When Deshaun Watson played games, when he played, Clemson was plus 7 games beyond their talent. Okay. When he did not play, Dabo Sweeney is minus 3 games for the rest of his career. Without Deshaun Watson, Dabo Sweeney has been pedestrian. He's been Jimbo Fisher. He took a once, like you said, once in a lifetime, a generational Clemson player, and he put that entire team on his back. I really like their profile, but given what he's done without Deshaun Watson, I don't have a lot of faith in them being able to repeat that.
All right, one other team I wanted to talk to you about. This is you know, you had me in tears listening to you on Bow Bounds about this, but Georgia, a lot of people, you know, Barrett Salee saying they're going to win the SEC, they're going to make the playoff. Tell us about the schematic advantage there in Athens.
No, they are the schematic disadvantage. I was amazed because my buddy who helped me put these grades together, you know, we were both like, oh my God, look how crappy those two coordinators are. And we were laughing about it. And then we ran all the numbers and then you go, okay, all the numbers, you got this huge spreadsheet. We're like, okay, let's see here, data, filter, sort. Okay, highest to lowest, number 130, Georgia. That's right, Georgia. Their schedule of offensive and defensive coordinators versus the career ability of their two offensive and defensive coordinators is the worst in all of FBS. Not Power 5, not the SEC, 130 teams. They are dead freaking last. They have an F- defensive coordinator. They have an F offensive coordinator. Nobody has that profile. And then when you look at what they're playing, nothing really stands out. They do play the 35th ranked defensive coordinator schedule, but they also play the 42nd ranked offensive coordinator schedule. So you have above average difficulty on both of those fronts, and the quite possibly, arguably, I'd say the worst offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator in college football combination. And so you got F minus and F. So when I'm telling you no one's made the national title game with anything worse than a C plus, and these guys are touting F, and people think these guys are going to get into the playoffs, if they get there with these two guys and their crap garbage trend of their careers, it will be amazing, absolutely amazing. I'll go the other way. Notre Dame's going to beat Georgia and finish with more wins.
All right, so Georgia ranks 130 out of 130. You know, also kind of adding to the to how amusing this is, tell us who ranks number one in your schematic advantage in the nation.
Of course, right? Ironically, it's who they're playing on Saturday. Appalachian State. You have two A-plus coordinators. There's zero talent at Appalachian State. What they do for offensive and defensive scoring efficiency has been nothing short of miraculous. In fact, if Smart and that group was to get fired, I would love to see Georgia just go to Appalachian State, all of them, everything, and just go, yoink, go for it, guys.
So, again, you're not necessarily saying it's, you know, the number one coordinator team against the number 130 because you're factoring in the entire season, but this is, it's still an intriguing matchup. I'm going to be very curious to watch this. You know, the spread in that game is 13.5 right now. I don't know. I'll be very interested to see how that one plays out.
Yeah, you still have a huge talent gap. You still have the number 6 versus the 121st recruiter. Mm-hmm. Think about that. 6 versus 121. You know, that's like playing UTEP or Army. You know, I mean, just it's one step away from upstairs Bahamas Dental School University team. You know, and so you know, just from that standpoint, if you just showed me those two talent, I would just say, oh, my God, that elite talent is going to absolutely blow this team out by 50 points. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that the spread is only 13.5 says an awful lot about what Vegas thinks about the coaching ability at Georgia. The talent's there. Don't anybody tell me the cupboard's bare. The talent is national championship talent, period. Always has been, always will be. Second best recruiter this century, only one without a national title in the top 10 in recruiting this century. So it's there. I think that spread says everything you need to know, even before I started talking about the coaching staff at Georgia.
Let me ask you this. I just thought of this while you were talking. What if we were to flip the coordinators at Arkansas and give them to Georgia? How high would Georgia rank, do you think, in your schematic advantage?
Oh, schematic. If we did that,
yeah.
I can actually hear. No, I can literally tell you exactly what that would be. Let me change a number in this spreadsheet. And, .135. They would move up to 6.
Wow. So from 130 to 6.
Yeah. And I would call them an immediate national title contender. Immediate.
And the reason I think that's so interesting, I don't know if you're aware of this, but from what I understand, the first call Kirby Smart made when he was named head coach of Georgia, he called over Fayetteville to get Dan Enos in Athens. But he's apparently got a clause in his contract where he's not allowed to take another offensive coordinator job in the SEC. So it just goes to show you how close that came to fruition.
Yeah, and it shows you how insane it is. So you went Dan Enos to Cheney. That's as bat crap crazy as Butch going from Canada to Scott. It's like, what is happening? How do you each select A-plus coordinators and then your fallback position is a bum? I don't get it.
Yeah, I can tell you if I had one of these multi-million-dollar jobs, I don't think I would, you know, putting my chances on a Hail Mary, but that seems what a couple of these guys are doing.
Yep, exactly. And it'd be easy. I can take a lot of pressure off all of them and show them exactly how these guys perform and what they're looking for. If they want an offensive coordinator that plays slow and efficient, fast and efficient, medium pace and efficient. All the numbers are there. It's really easy to make a level playing field.
All right, Dave, I really appreciate your time. I don't want to take up too much of it. We've already had you for about 30 minutes. Again, for anyone that was unfamiliar with you, Dave Bartu at CFB Matrix on Twitter. This is a must follow. No one else has these numbers. No one else is tweeting this information out. Visit his page, donate at his Patreon account. And thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Mike. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks again to Dave Bartu for being the latest guest on That SEC Podcast, Episode 7. If you enjoyed that, give us some feedback. Let us know. He said he's more than willing to come on again, talk about some of the other SEC teams, talk about more of the numbers he's got. He's got a lot of insight there that no one else has. You can use that gambling-wise, however you want to use it. Thanks again for listening, guys. See you next time.